Doc, if you're listening to this right now and you're watching this, remove your ego for a second. If your practice is doing $60,000 a month or $40,000 a month or $70,000 a month, and you're not feeling fulfilled, are you really the ideal dentist for the majority of patients who really need you? And where the motivation for the self-improvement should come from is that you want to help more people. And by becoming the ideal dentist, you will put more smiles on earth, you'll help more people, and you will change lives through dentistry. And that's really where the motivation should come from for that self-improvement.
This is Growth in Dentistry, a dental intelligence podcast, where we ask the question, what does growth in dentistry mean to you? I'm Steve Jensen, a data dental nerd and your host.
Hey, what's up, everyone, and welcome to the Growth in Dentistry podcast. Super excited for our guest today. This isn't the first time I've had him on, and it certainly will not be the last. This is one of my favorite people to talk to, Matt Brown from Energize. He is super connected to the dental industry in a way that I find very, very few other people to be. I am an absolute data nerd. I think people know that from listening. And Matt and I are kindred spirits that way. In fact, he comes and asks me questions that I have never thought about. He wants to know, hey, like, which of my clients are the all-time best at patient growth? Which of my clients are the all-time best? Like, and when he says all-time best, he doesn't mean just for the people he works with. He means like he's convinced that the practices that he's helping are hands down the best in the entire industry all time. And there have been several times where I'm convinced he's actually right. So we're doing some research on that. If we get some findings, I will absolutely let people know. So super excited for today. Now, before I jump in and chat with Matt, a couple of quick things that I always have to just check off real quick. First, big thanks to Dental Intelligence for supporting this podcast week after week. The marketing team does so much work in the back end. They have an offer. If you haven't checked out Dental Intelligence for a while, or if you do use Dental Intelligence, but you don't use all of our products like the new scorecards or the insurance claims processing tool or the payments tool, they'll give you a $50 gift card just for coming and getting a demo. So check out that link in the show notes. I'll also just mention, even though, you know, Matt will probably have something to say at the end, if you are out there thinking, you know what, I want to check out options to grow my business, or maybe the marketing partner you're working with is just not cutting it, which I hate to say it is like pretty common as well. Definitely after listening to this, you're going to want to get connected with Matt and the team at Energize. So we'll also put a link to their website in the show notes. Now, without any further ado, Matt, welcome to the podcast. How you doing, man?
Oh, dude, it's always great to get time to talk to you. Like I get excited about time with you all the time.
So I'm interested to hear like what's new. What's new in your life? Anything like cool and new at Energize? And I also want to I want to get to content like pretty quick. I want people to like hear your Energize thoughts on stuff, but I wanted to just give you a chance to say like what's new, what's up.
Couple things are really new at Energize. We have a new product coming out called Smart Sites. It's a 100% purely data driven website based on patient behaviors exhibited across all the data we collect every day. The other thing that's new at Energize, not really Energize, but for me and Ryan, my co-founder, we started buying frost practices in the state of Texas. And we bought a practice in the Houston area like 3 months ago. It was doing like 70 to 80,000 a month. Last month, it hit like 170. This month, we're probably going to land, you know, summer, you know, summer's happening, vacation. I can land somewhere between, you know, around 150-ish probably. But me and the other owner have, you've seen our data. We've built a lot of $2 million practices. Our average practice does 2.75 in production. And we decided earlier this year that we were going to save our money and we were going to start buying practices. And we bought practice one, then we bought a lab. And now we made an offer on practice two. I think we took possession of practice two in August. So, you know, new product coming out, Energized, Smart Sites. It's really awesome. And then me and the other owner are buying practices right now. And it's really, really exciting. We have an awesome, clinically driven, really good surgical prost partner. His name's Ashu Kokoda. The guy is super smart. He's clinically gifted. And we have another partner who's really awesome, a case presentation named Blake. And it's just been a really awesome experience as a practice owner. So as a marketer, buying practices is a whole new brave world for me, but it's exciting. I like stuff like that. I like challenges. It's fun.
See, which I'm going to say this too. For listeners, Matt, if you don't know this yet, Matt started a podcast called Dentistry Unfiltered. Highly recommend going and listening to it. It is my personal favorite. Like a lot of podcasts I listen to, they'll be like hot out of the gates and then content can kind of get dry. And to this point, he has not disappointed me. And I think part of that, Matt, is because not only are you doing marketing and dentistry, but I think the fact that you're buying practices and are so tapped in with Dr. Vallo as well, you guys just consistently deliver. So definitely go check out his podcast. I'll also make sure that's in the show notes. Just a link to Dentistry Unfiltered.
It's Dental Unfiltered.
Oh, yeah. Make sure I get the name right. Dental Unfiltered with Matt Brown and Dr. Andrew Vallo. It's a phenomenal listen. Now, Matt, let's jump in. We kind of pre-gamed a little bit on this, so I'm excited to talk about this with everyone. Tell us, there's a common thing in dentistry that people teach, and they'll talk about how, like, you've got to come up with your ideal patient. And there are even, like, agencies, marketing agencies that are, like, pumping this idea of an ideal patient. And I'm just going to shut my mouth and let you riff for a second on your thoughts on that. Because why that's bad, maybe why it's good. Talk to me about ideal patient.
I don't think it's good at all. So a little bit real quick for the audience, you know, I'm not a dental guy in dental. Okay. Yeah. I'm a former special ops guy. I'm a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt. I ended up landing in dental. What's interesting about that is I don't subscribe to any standard industry thinking. Whenever I hear something regurgitated on stage or in webinars from multiple people, multiple times, I start to really question it. And I've questioned this ideal patient concept for a very long time. And our data shows that it's a complete farce. I tend to be very polar with this stuff. So people are gonna listen to this who subscribe to that and they're gonna hate me and I really don't care. The reality is this, is what happens is an agency owner or consulting firm says, hey, write down your ideal patient avatar. And a doc sits there with no data-driven anything and says, who's the person I would like to talk to chairside? And they write it down.
Money, similar hobbies, interests.
Similar ethnic background, similar income level, all this stuff, right? My first question is, looking at where you're landing your practice, what percentage of that population is that? It could be very small. Mm. My next thing is, just on an operational level, in the operatory, doc's hands moving level, what have you invested your time and money in for modalities of treatment, right? So if you invested a lot of time and money in all on X, all on four, implants, implant-supported dentures, all this stuff, right? And is your avatar actually, do those people actually need where you've invested clinically for that, right? So just from a point of view of doc feeling clinically fulfilled and feeling not clinically bored. I talk to so many docs every day and they say, I do $80,000 a month. I would want to do 150 or 200 like my buddies, or I do $60,000 a month, whatever it is. And I ask them, what modalities of treatment do you do? And they say them all. They say all on X, snap and dentures, implants, sinus lifts, they say all this stuff. I go, well, you actually don't do them. And they go, well, what do you mean? I'm like, at $60,000 a month, if you do one arch a year, you're lucky.
Yeah.
So you don't do them. I'll say, doc, are you clinically bored? And doc will say, I'm so tired of drilling, filling crowns. Mm. I'm like, so can you admit to me you don't do these things? No, I don't ever do them, actually. Oh, so you have the ability to do them. And maybe that doc's problem is the avatar they built in their head that they want every marketing company to get them doesn't actually need those things. So that's the first problem. The second problem is, and no one wants to talk about this, is it more important for us to find the ideal patient or for us to be the ideal doc for the ideal patient, right? So this is the deal, okay? There's this giant digital ecosystem built around us that is like a giant air traffic control system bringing patients towards us, right? It's massive. It's Google. It's Facebook. It's your website. This thing is a behemoth. It's a machine. It's Skynet from Terminator 2, all right? But it's dentistry, all right? And does it actually perform designed the way for you to find your ideal patient? The answer is no, not a shot. So this is the deal. A patient comes, they read reviews, they come towards you. The patient can leave a review for you. You can't leave a review for the patient. Mm-hmm. The system is designed for the patient to find the ideal dentist, not the dentist to find the ideal patient. It's not the way it's designed. The doc does not get to go on a website and look at patients and read about them like it's a dating website and say, you're my pet match. There's no
swiping right. Someone could do this. Like, not, they just start swiping right on all the
like, things. Like, I want dental Tinder doesn't exist.
Yeah, it does not exist.
So we have all these consulting firms, and some of them I'm partnered with. I'm sure some of the consultants I work with are going to listen to this. I'm like, Matt, can you stop saying this? Because I talk about this all the time.
No, but it's, the reality is, point. I want to say something too. As you were talking about like this idea of an ideal patient and what the doc wants to do, I was trying to imagine like, okay, like let's say I do want to do a lot of like all on floors, implants. And if I'm just trying to be like an honest human and I'm trying to picture like, hey, where, if I was in like an amazing race or something, some TV show, and the TV show was, okay, I've got to go find the highest likelihood place where people are going to be missing teeth, right? I'm probably not running to a country club. I'm probably not running to like this idea of like who I want. You know what I mean? Like the places where I'm going to find the folks without the teeth, a lot of times are going to be misaligned with what this doctor probably has for their vision of their practice.
It's not even in this, it's not even in the same neighborhood.
Yeah. So that's like, that I think is really interesting to think about. And then one of the other comments you made, Matt, and then we can go to Ideal Doc for a second. You made this comment about how like most of these practices you meet with, they'll say they do all this stuff, but they don't actually do it. One of my favorite things to do. So one of the things that DI does is it's called a growth report. And one of those pages has we just look at an analysis of all the codes you bill out over the last 12 months. And we show you the top 25. Okay. So we just take all the codes you build out, top 25 based off of volume. One of my favorite things to do is I have a couple of doctors. Some of them are probably ones that Matt works with at Energized, where I know they are producing at a really high level. They're actually doing high volume of implants. They're actually doing high volume of all on fours. Like they're doing that because they're showing up high on this analysis, on the volume analysis. And I just love, I get a doctor's analysis from like an average GP practice doing, you know, $1 million or $100,000 a month. And I compare it to one of these doctors. I have three of them that are doing 200 plus a month. And they're always just amazed when we go kind of like line by line, like look at what point we start getting way off from each other, where like on the average doc, it's like exams and pro fees and exams and images. And then a bunch of different fillings, you know, 2-3 surface fillings.
Crowns is their big exciting
crowns. Brand. But you'd be amazed, like the average doc, like crowns is probably like 14, 15, 16 rows down this analysis. So it's really interesting. Like if folks want to, one of the things I love about Matt and his team is they can do stuff like that. They'll like look and see like, what are you actually doing? But that's really like every doc I show that to, they're always like, holy crap, like I didn't realize it was possible to do the kind of volume that these other docs are doing. Like, and it's a mindset shift for sure. So I want to hear more of your thoughts on like this ideal doc. Like, what does that mean? Because I do think there's like a big mindset shift they have to go to with like, hey, what are they going to do? How are they going to do it? And I want to hear some of your thoughts there.
So on the mindset, right? Like a lot of times what I find with the ideal, so I'm trying to get my chair comfortable, with the ideal patient concept, it kind of ends up existing two places with the doc, I find. Okay. The first place it exists with the doc is like first buying a practice, first starting up a practice. Mm-hmm. This is kind of like the thing that I hold on to that makes me feel good, that like all my operatory interactions will be great. I think the ideal patient thing becomes the place where you can hide from the fact that you suck chairside.
Interesting.
All right.
You get to blame the patient. That's not my ideal patient.
Yeah. And then I think that's really unhealthy. You know, our real job is to be compassionate caregivers. And I say us real job, guys. I'm not a dentist, but I take what I do really seriously. Because of Energize, I believe there's more smiles on earth today than there was 4 years ago. And I take a lot of pride in that. Me and Ryan, my partner, something we really reflect on that we love. And
okay, I'm going to give this nugget right here since Matt won't plug it. I've yet to find a marketing agency. So he says there's more smiles out there because of Energize. I've yet to find another marketing agency that has produced higher patient-based growth rates than Energize has. We work with a bunch.
Yeah.
And if there are any agencies that don't work with DI, that haven't listened to this podcast, and you think that you're doing better than Matt, then like,
listen, throw down the gauntlet, let's have a competition. This guy loves competition. Me and my business partner, Ryan, are the most competitive people you'll ever meet in your life. We'd love to compete. If you're on DI as a partner, you say, I beat their metrics.
Yeah, so
let's find out, because I would love to know.
It. I'm not going to throw anyone under the bus. I'm going to like throw names out there unless they want to like get into the game and say, hey, put my name up there. With,
throw your hat with in the ring.
And we'll be you know, open and honest about it. But I will say that I haven't found. So when Matt says like that there's more smiles because of Energize, like that's proven. And I can help prove that with the growth they're able to create in these practices. So anyway, sorry, keep going.
So go back to the ideal pitching concept. So you know, I had two docs. They were out Midwest. Mm-hmm. And there are partners in a practice, and you see the level of like news chart capture when Energize gets involved.
Yeah.
So let's say they got 100 new patients in a month, right? Partner one, if he got 50 patients, would convert 30. Partner two would get 50 patients, he'd convert 4.
Yep.
And partner two would have meetings with my staff and say, none of these people are my ideal patient. They're just all bad. Then we look at the data, what partner one got, partner one did fine. So we had partner two on a call, and I said, hey, doc, how old are you? He said, I'm in my 40s. I said, are you single? He said, yeah, I'm single. I said, can you tell me why? Like, dating not your thing? What's up? I'm just trying to figure out your personality here a little bit. Because, you know, I've never really been great with girls. I'm like, you don't think that, like, being in an operatory for a patient is, like, way more intimidating than a first date? Like, they're already in fear of you, and you have to smile at them, and there's some salesmanship here to happen. He goes, well, I got in dental for not being, I don't want to be a salesperson. I got in dental to be a dentist, not a salesperson. Mm. And I'm like, but it is a sale. Like, just own it. Like, it is. And with the point of the sale that's really important is these people are coming in a heightened fear state, and it's our job to transfer emotion to them that this is their new dental home and that we care about them and that we are the right choice. And what really is sad is there's a lot of clinically gifted dentists.
Yeah.
Clinically gifted. I mean, these guys can do things that other dentists would shake watching getting done and couldn't do it, but their personalities chair side are not there at all. And what's sad about that is they live in a state of frustration where they don't get the ability to exercise those clinical abilities. Now, on the other side, we have docs that are not clinically gifted at all, but are awesome chair side, and people say yes to that.
Yep.
And I had an example of that, and this is going to get back to the ideal patient concept. I had a doc, I won't say the region is in, because I don't want to give any secrets. And the doc placed more implants than most of my docs. And his brother was an oral surgeon in the same medical building as him. And he did IV sedation. And he's like, listen, bro, I place a lot of implants. But what you don't know is my brother bails me out like weekly all the time because I suck. But his brother is there to help him, right? Because his brother's an oral surgeon, can hop right in and help him. And this guy was placing implants left and right. And it all came down to chairside manner. Now, what's really interesting is we'll spend money on CE courses for implants, CE courses for oral devices for sleep apnea, CE courses for all these different things. I ask most dentists, is chairside manner everything? They say yes. I'm like, when was the last time you bought a CE course for chairside manner? Never.
Never, yeah.
It's always more clinical. So going back to the ideal patient concept, a lot of times docs will say, these are not my ideal patients. And what that is that's their way of taking, not having to look at themselves and say, hey, maybe I'm the problem, and pushing it over there and saying, you know, it's this element, it's not me. But what happens is we had two practices north of Houston in the Woodlands that were near each other. They're like maybe 5 miles apart, 4 miles apart, close enough that we could have cross-pollination, right? And they've been this for a while. And practice one, same scenario as the two docs. Practice one flourished and did awesome. Practice two struggled. Well, we cross-referenced the population at one point. We found like 10 patients who accepted treatment in the good practice for $5,000 or more. So that, and I talked to doc number two in the struggling practice. I was like, doc, that's rejection. You got rejected. Now, the question becomes, that sounds harsh, right? But the question becomes, what do we do to improve, right? And my point is you keep wrapping yourself in this false security of an ideal patient concept, that will keep you from personal growth in the operatory 100% of the time. If you're saying, hey, I'm not getting treatment plan acceptance because you marketer, you this person, you gave me the wrong patient, you are now stunting yourself from personal growth chair side. And when I see, I have examples and data for this, it goes on for days. You have to understand if you layer this. First layer is what you write down as your avatar might be people that don't need your modalities of treatment that you invest a lot of money in. That's layer number one. So from a clinical point of view, from a purely clinical point of view, the ideal patient concept is very, very flawed. Second layer is the entire behemoth of a system driving patients towards us, Google, Facebook, all this stuff. It's designed for the consumer to find the ideal dentist, not the dentist to find the ideal consumer. So on that next layer of how the patient comes towards us, it's flawed again. Mm-hmm. And the third place it's flawed is if you personally in the operatory are blaming case acceptance on this concept, you have created your own flaw of no improvement by not recognizing maybe some of your deficiencies where you can get better to be the ideal doc for that patient. One of my best docs is a guy named Rami Nazarian. He's in Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
He's been with me for like 4 years. Guy's awesome. And I watch him like a chameleon. Like I've been to his practice in Michigan. He'll go into a patient and he reads the patient and instantly he becomes like the patient and he gets on their side and they like him and they just say yes to him.
Amazing.
The guy has like 13 ops. He's like a super practice, right? Mm-hmm. His best friends, a practice called WOW, Arvind Karana and Samir Hanna, I won't say their numbers, but they're the biggest practice I have in my system. So they're ginormous. And the two of them, I watch these two docs too. Same thing. They get in the operatory, they read the patient, and in 2 minutes, they're on the same level with the patient. The patient's saying yes. It's more important to be the ideal dentist for the patient, clearly, than the other way around. I'm going to make enemies with this. It's a very bad, unhealthy concept that we should start trying to drive out of dentistry. If we really care about what's best for the patient, hunting for the ideal patient and being picky about patients is not being loyal to people that need care.
Mm-hmm. I always say this too, like I'll like even go broader than just like dentistry. It's just human behavior. Whenever things don't go our way, to look for like this external locus of control, like the reason why I didn't get this promotion, the reason why this bad thing happened to me is because of something somebody else did. And so I agree with you. Just in general, that kind of external locus of control is unhealthy in general. It's better to like put it on myself. Okay, like what? How am I going to refine the way I think, behave, act, respond to help improve the experience I'm having? Right, like that is a much
the psychology of it is not good.
Yeah, I agree. You know, like I think thinking to myself, okay, how can I be the ideal doc for these patients and for these cases that I want to do clinically that are more interesting to me is a much healthier place to be, and it's far more productive. One thing I'll say too, and it's interesting, it's pretty obvious that so many doctors will say, yeah, I want to do more of these complicated cases, but it's pretty clear from the data that they're not the ideal doctor for that. So two examples. One, 2 days ago, so this end of this last week, I met with a doctor, and one of my favorite reports, I can see, it's on that growth report again, I can see, hey, when you present smaller treatment between like zero and $1,500, what's your case acceptance and how much are you presenting in that bucket? And then $1,500 to $2,500 and $2,500 to $5,000 and then $5,000 to 10 and 10 plus, okay? What's really cool with this doctor, which is so rare, is, and this is where I would suggest he is the ideal doctor for his patients, regardless of the case size he's presenting, his case acceptance stays pretty homogenous. Like if he presents $500, 60% of the time is getting accepted. If he presents $10,000 plus in treatment, 60% of the time is still getting accepted. What's really interesting though, the average dentist, when they present the drill and fill stuff, yeah, it's getting accepted, you know, 30, 40, 50%, great. But as you go down this waterfall, it gets slimmer and slimmer and slimmer to the time where we get to like 10% plus, average dentist is only getting like 5-6% of that dentistry completed, which is just crazy to me. It tells me that there's this big gap between what they think they are and what the patients think they are. Does that make sense? So the more we can align ourselves on this idea of being the ideal doc, the better we can be at making sure that as we present these different cases to these patients, we can have this more homogenous experience with case acceptance, I think.
So a couple of things that kids come part of that is when you come on with Energize, if you deal with me, there's a couple of questions I ask. One question is, what is your clinical bravery on a 1 to 10?
Yeah,
one is cool. What is your sales ability on a 1 to 10, right? Because those two things are going to directly dictate case acceptance. And if you're hiring me for marketing, I have to gauge my ability to get your return on investment. Mm-hmm. If I say, what is your clinical bravery on a 1 to 10? You say a 3. That means you're going to refer out a lot. And I have a lower probability of getting high dollar work out of you.
Yep.
Right. If I you say, what is your sales ability? You say something below a 5. It's the same thing. Right. So the optimum answer we like is a 7 or an 8 on a 1 to 10 for clinical bravery. And a 7 or an 8 to me is a doc that pushes his limits in the operatory based on this concept that I can provide better continuity care and quality of care for this patient here in my control, in my environment, than sending him off to the unknown of a specialist. Now, there's scenarios where it's just out of his clinical ability and he should refer them. But some docs, what happens is the moment they see that this could be harder, they could probably do it, but it scares them a little bit. Referral is more comfortable than pushing their limits in the operatory. And I find that anyone that gives me an answer of 5 or below all falls into that. Mm. And if you combine that sales ability, the patient communication part, with your clinical bravery, you get docs that consistently do that. What's really cool is if I go through Energize and randomly grab practices that are doing 2.75, 2.5, 3, 4, I have a practice doing 7 million. And I go back and look at their questionnaire when they first started working with me and what I asked them, the docs that have very consistent high patient value, Energize average high patient value is like, our average is like 2,600 patient value from us, 2,625 I think is what it is currently. And then I have practices averaging 3,000 and 4,000, right? That's what they're doing consistently, right?
Mm-hmm.
Those docs, the same docs that answered a 7 or above on both those questions.
Yep.
And that's what you're talking about, that homogenistic, like consistency. Like I know I can tell you exactly what docs in my system that they present 1,000 or 40,000. If I give them 100 cases each, they would be consistent no matter what the dollar value is.
Yep.
Because clinical bravery collides with chairside manner and you get consistency of case acceptance.
You also, I'm assuming you also come off far more confident when you're presenting that case to the patient, you know, where like if my clinical confidence in presenting that case is like a 3 or even a 5, then people have BS filters. Like they're going to feel in your voice like,
and this goes back to the ideal dentist thing, right? Like if I'm a dentist chairside and I'm not navigating the human terrain first,
uh-huh.
and I'm going purely clinical, like a really big mistake is to like ask the patient what brings you in today, and they say an implant, and you get a model of an implant, start explaining how to do an implant, or you instantly go right to the x-ray and talk off the x-ray. If you think about it, like when docs are explaining how to do an implant, have you ever had a chef at a restaurant teach you how or tell you how they're going to make your food?
No.
Never, right? They know you know how to do an implant. Stop doing that. How about say like, you know, what are your goals for your dental needs? And find out what their emotional hot button was that got them over their dental fear and got them there, and learn what's important to them. And then say, yeah, you need an implant. We're going to do that. They don't need to know how you do it. Mm-hmm. Navigate the human terrain first. But when you're dealing with them, voice inflection, body language, eye contact, and content are so important. And if one of those things is off, they're going to detect it. Like you said, if you don't have good voice inflection, good body language, they're never going to say yes to you for a $15,000 treatment. And that goes back to, are you really being the ideal dentist for most patients? Or are you trying to pick the ideal patient because you don't have the ability to be the ideal dentist chairside?
Yeah. Yeah. I was just going to say too, like when you're, this is maybe just like a random nugget. We use like a sales methodology or communication methodology here at Dental Intelligence called Griffin Hill. And like one of the key pieces is when you're doing what we call like a needs audit, or it's this conversation with the patient, like what are your goals with your oral health? There's 5 P's that you're searching for, these 5 P's of benefit. So people will make decisions based off of these 5 things. So it's either they're making a decision for pain relief. They might be, that's 1 P. They might be making a decision for preservation. Like they're just trying to like save themselves. They might make a decision for their own pleasure. They're just trying to like enhance their life experience. They might make decisions for, the 4th one is profit. And then the last one is prestige. And speaking to those 5 P's, like which one of those is the one that your patient wants? Like, do they want, you know, ortho because of prestige, or do they want it for something else? You know, matters as well. So just making sure you're like really listening to the patients as they're talking and speaking to the benefits that they actually want. Because if you don't, then it goes right over their head. They don't really care that much. So I'll just throw that little like nugget in there. I think that's a little helpful concept.
I think some of this isn't like doc, if you're listening, none of this is your fault. Like you have an industry that has that has preached this ideology to you pretty hard and shoved it in your throat. And then you go through 10 years of school where if chairside manner is everything, how is it there isn't a semester on people skills and interpersonal navigation, and you're navigating somebody who's in fear of you? Like, doc, it's not your fault, right? Like, it's like no one's saying like, hey doc, you failed. Like, you've been kind of bombarded with these things, and then the education system you go through, they fail to give you business training, they fail to give you training on this. But we know that. So now the question becomes, how do you seek the improvement for this, right? Because like doc, if you're listening to this right now and you're watching this, remove your ego for a second. If your practice is doing $60,000 a month or $40,000 a month or $70,000 a month, and you're not feeling fulfilled, are you really the ideal dentist for the majority of patients who really need you? And where the motivation for the self-improvement should come from is that you want to help more people. And by becoming the ideal dentist, you will put more smiles on earth, you will help more people, and you will change lives through dentistry. And that's really where the motivation should come from for that self-improvement.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. And Matt, this is probably a good time to like wrap it up. You've sold me. I'm convinced. Ideal patient maybe is not the best way to look at it. I think ideal doc is much healthier place to be. Thanks for jumping on today. I always ask,
no problem, man.
Your answer was probably like a good one already, but I'm going to ask this anyway. Every guest I ask the question, what does growth in dentistry mean to you? And I'd love to hear a response to that as we wrap things up.
So growth in dentistry to me means bottom line revenue. That's what it means. So, and I just real quick caveat on that. All data that we track in our world is an indicator of a human behavior. A stock chart is an indicator of the sales team, the product team, the leadership of a company, right? Doc, you have to understand that your bottom line collections is a KPI of you personally and your performance. It really is. Like, you know, if you're an awesome doc chairside and you're clinically gifted, you could have a rough case presenter. You could have a dental assistant who's slower, but you'll still have okay revenue. You could have better revenue. You'll have okay revenue. If you have revenue that you're embarrassed to tell your friends, you're the leader of the business. You own the business. You're the doc. You're the everything. Understand that is your KPI. So growth to me is bottom line revenue. That's what it is. I bought my practice at 70 or 80. It's done 170 once already. It'll probably end around 150 this month. I want to get it to 250. That is growth to me. That is it. And I really believe in the entire business world, Harvard Business School, that's probably the definition of growth.
Yeah, I'm, you know, some people, I think you're right. I think you love polarizing answers. Some people might be like, well, what? That's like money hungry, whatever. But I agree that like, that means you're giving care. I say this all the time.
Yes.
Like, you show me the dentist that has the highest case acceptance, who presents treatment to people, who can be a little more aggressive maybe than the other. They're going to get more treatment done than the next person. You show me the goal-oriented dentist who's like trying to grow the business. They're the ones that are driving more needed dentistry than the people who are like tiptoeing around patients and their care, right? So I'm 100% on board with that. That bottom line is what is growth in dentistry and what will yield ultimately the most care for, you know, patients. I love that.
The two KPIs I look at in DI and all my accounts all the time is the collections board. I go to the revenue chart to see revenue year over year. And I look at average patient value going up or down.
Yep. That's
and great. If average patient value is below like 750-ish, 650, 800, I'm real concerned.
Yep.
If it's above that, if it's above 900, I'm pretty impressed, to be honest.
Yep.
It's kind of my point of view. I have a practice doing like...
Just so everyone knows, like average annual patient value, which is just like your total collections for the year divided by your total active patients, average in the industry is like 650, 700 bucks. Okay. So that's like average. So, which you don't see that in Matt's clients, by the way, just like as a node, like they're all...
No, it's they're all 1,000 plus pretty much. My clients are 1,000 plus almost all the time.
Yeah.
Well, it was awesome being on, Stephen. Thank you so much. I really enjoyed this.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man. So, thanks for coming on and joining me. I'll just comment this again. If listening to this, you're like, hey, I want to get connected with Matt. I mean, Matt and his team exude this. I know Matt. I know Ryan. I know Riley on his team, who you would probably work with kind of coming into the Energize fold. They're all amazing people that have big hearts that want to help dentistry, and they're doing it the right way. So if you want to get connected with these guys, we'll throw their website in the show notes. Definitely come and connect with them. This isn't the last time you'll hear from Matt. We're big fans of his over here at Dental Intelligence, and we'll keep chatting for sure. And thanks everyone for joining today. This has been another episode of the Growth in Dentistry podcast. My name is Steve Jensen, your host and fellow data nerd. Keep growing.